Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listen audience. You're listening once again to another edition of Religion Means Live. I'm your host, Imam Alfred Muhammad, the host of Religion Means Live. I'm a user-friendly imam, a servant of God, and a servant of people, and a particular servant of the African-American people. In fact, I've taken on the title. Has been given to me by my publicist, Muslim African American Life Speaker. I'm supposed to speak to life. So we have with us another powerful, powerful political mind, spiritual mind, directional mind, and one of the finest public figures history has ever seen. Buddy, man, what do you mean the finest public servant we have ever seen? One of them. Well, he studied under the greatest leader that walked the earth since Muhammad himself. He has gotten more light than any human being has ever gotten on earth because he got the light from an ex-slave, a nappy-head slave, who 150 years ago would have been a slave, 150 years and about 3 months ago would have been a slave. And God freed his mind, freed his intellect, freed his spirit. And this brother submitted himself. He weren't arrogant. He didn't let his professorship at Syracuse University get to his head. He didn't get drunk with his LLM. And even Mr. Chief Justice Roberts, he doesn't have an LLM. Even Mr. Justice Thomas, even Mr. Justice Kennedy, none of them have LLMs. He didn't get drunk on that. He didn't even get drunk of being an ex-Negro in the Alabama legislature where George Wallace said segregation now, segregation forever. It would have been enough to make a Negro get drunk just to walk in the state house that George Wallace had once presided over, and especially a Muslim. Didn't get drunk off there. Didn't get drunk as a prosecutor, didn't get drunk as city councilman, didn't get drunk when Mayor Smithering told him to stand up on the fire truck and sight the moon. The same mayor had presided over segregation. Didn't get drunk when Miss Annie Mae Cooper shook his hand after slapping Jim Clark back into Ireland somewhere. Didn't get drunk. Stood up, went to work, and developed a community development class, rolled up his sleeves, and came to Elijahville. Wasn't too proud. Didn't get too proud because he had a brother who was a lawyer, an engineer. But he didn't forget his daddy. That his daddy had worked in the backwoods, following the mule. Didn't get drunk. He humble, a servant of God. And I'm honored and privileged. I'm going to fire questions at him like I'm a prosecutor. And I'm going to see whether or not he is able to handle the challenge of the day. And ladies and gentlemen, you will be the jury. You know, nothing I love better than a Southern preacher, a defense lawyer, a prosecutor. So I'm going to challenge one of the most defense attorneys, one of the most prosecutors I used to have, what I listened to when I was a little boy, knee-high to a duck. So we're going to find some questions. I noticed that you've been a prosecutor and know you've been a defense attorney. I want you to put on your prosecutor's hat now, not a Negro hat, but a real live prosecutor's hat. And I want you to visit there in Texas with us. And I want to see whether or not there's a probable cause for arresting anyone, or is this just another CNBC, CNN, and game that they're playing with us every year that somebody died and they want to excite us. So, counsel.
Well, brother, ma'am, we'll deal with that. But why don't you lay a little opening protocol on myself in the audience? I could hear you in the voice. You fired up and you're ready to roll, but let's just slow it down and lay some protocol out there, and then we'll deal with your questions. Is that all right, my friend?
Yes, sir. What protocol? I'm old, uncivilized country boy. And perhaps if I had been a minister of the bar, I would have been old country boy.
Opening, you know, acknowledging Allah and giving the
Okay, go, may you proceed to do that. I'm going to go with the protocol. Okay, I okay. When I do public forums, I don't quite do it, but I'll let you do the opening, counsel.
Shadow and I hey Allah, wa shadow and Anna Muhammad and Rasulullah. Dear beloved audience, we greet you as brothers in the struggle. With the greeting, I greet you on behalf of myself and my brother in the struggle. Assalamu alaikum. And let me just say, brother Imam, while you increase with your statements of support on the personality level, I must decrease. I'm not impressed with the personality Yusuf Abdul Salam, but I'm very impressed that as a result of this struggle and the light that we have been blessed with, that the self, the universal self that God created is emerging in all of us. And Imam say, hey, Wallace Muhammad is one thing, but Imam Wahdatuddin Muhammad is something else. He was referring to Wallace as the personality that housed his highly evolved self, Imam Wahdatuddin Muhammad. But most of the time, he was just plain Brother Wallace until that other bag came out.
Sir,
you still there, my brother?
You have spoken correctly, as the angel Jibril told the prophet. You have spoken correctly. I agree with you, and I appreciate your decent response. I would like to now, if you will, visit, and I would say this, the reason I introduce you as that body, current that body of knowledge, that wisdom and understanding, I want our audience to know I will always open in my mind and soul when I do public programming. That's been my strategy, to open internally with God's name. But I treat this as a regular radio show. As whomever's listening to it, many people do listen to it, are not Muslims and not practicing any faith. So I do. Religion Means Live is intended to reach that audience. In fact, that's my target audience. People who've been unchurched, unmosqued, very much like our prophet before he was given the prophethood. He was turned off by traditional religion. So I'm trying to reach those people. But
Well, that's great wisdom, brother, ma'am. I was not necessarily thinking along those lines, so I laid that out there. But it's been dealt with, and let's try to move on and I'm going to use a legal term, your interrogators. But the prophet said judge a man's intellect by the questions that he asks. So you're asking some very, very potent questions. So go ahead, my brother. Why don't you repeat?
Yes, sir. I want you to visit I forget the name of the sister. I have, and let me just say here as a sort of a rejoinder, I have pretty much forgotten the names of all the personalities that they put before us. Every 3 months now, it seems that some African-American has been killed by a Caucasian person. And I would say white because I'm talking of black and white stuff. It just seems to me we just have a flood, but we just can't seem to get together and talk about what goes on in Chicago, what goes on in our neighborhoods, even what goes on in our home and even what goes on in our soul. And I was trying to shake our audience up today when I gave a khutbah, which is a Muslim sermon and a Muslim prayer service. I led it on American Muslim 360. You can go to American Muslim 360 and go, download it and heard the Juma. But I just think that every summer, now it seems to be every 3 months, there's another African-American personality that they decide to bring before. So I want you to slightly litigate that case and see whether there's a smoke or there's a fire or what is going on with the case in Texas.
Well, my brother, prayer of thought, you know, they taught us to think like lawyers. And the first thing you have to do
is to frame the issue. Okay, and many times there may be a complex scenario where you have multiple issues. And sometimes people, if they're really not clear in their issue formulation, they will conflate issues. And so we want to separate at least four issues. There is a difference in terms of issues as to what African American people are suffering from in terms of what's called state action, where they get involved with state actors and they suffer harm or detriment in the form of injury and death. That's one issue. There's another issue of black-on-black crime. That issue is totally separated from the first issue. For instance, after that young man went into the church, which was not state action, it was a private citizen, went into that church and killed nine black folk. Then that next weekend, very closely, this seven African Americans, I think, were killed in Chicago. This 7-year-old boy and dozens wounded. A lot of people like to say, well, since there's an issue of black on black crime, we need to address that and don't worry about the first issue. No, we can do more than walk and chew chewing gum at the same time. That's a different issue. There is another issue going on. It's how and why and what do we do about Eastern Arab or immigrant Muslim violence in America. That's another issue. That's three. And then there's a fourth issue where the data indicates that 6-5% of mass shootings in America are being perpetrated by Caucasian males, last night, in Louisiana, one of them went into a movie theater and randomly shot at 12 folk, wounded 9, killed 2, and shot himself. Just last week, James Holmes out of Aurora, Colorado, was convicted of a movie theater shooting where he killed 12 and wounded dozens. Those are four separate issues, and they cannot and should not be conflated. Now, Bland, that's her name, Ann Bland, okay, is a recent, for lack of a better word, victim of state-imposed problems for an African-American. Now, the question is whether anything happened that would put blame on the state. Now, if we go right back to Texas, a few weeks ago, Texas law enforcement threw that young African American girl around at that pool like she was a rag doll. Okay? That issue is separate from the self-imposed blameworthy action we have in our own community of black-on-black violence. And we should not ignore state action against anybody that's violative of the Constitution just because we're killing ourselves as African Americans. Those two issues shouldn't be conflated. Now, in the case of Sandra Bland,
that it's clear that the state trooper involved in the arrest violated all kinds of state trooper by their own admission law enforcement policies. There's no doubt about it. But it's my understanding the question becomes whether those actions constitute violations which rise to the level of a criminal action. Most legal minds are admitting that there may be susceptibility on the part of that officer to civil activity. Just based upon the policy violations he committed in the arrest. I've seen some box-oriented law enforcement people that say that he violated all kinds of law enforcement policy with the arrest. Secondly, it's been documented that jailhouse protocol, surveying the inmate, making sure that certain safeguards were implemented. By everyone's admission, that jail has a record of violating that. That may or may not, I doubt that that arise to the level of a criminal complaint, but there's certainly the possibility of civil liability there. Now, the big issue is whether or not the state directly inflicted the deadly wound upon Sandra Bland. Now, there have been two autopsies. The one given by Harris County has concluded that the death was a result of suicide, hanging by suicide. But there's another autopsy out that the family has done. So that issue may not be concluded. So now, the truth of the matter is that the states, there's state action in America that's violating African-American rights. They're not dragging out anything. These rights are being violated. And I believe in what the ma'am said. If there's any insurgents of that kind of snake-like thing, we should aggressively cut their head off. You know, I took the position with you way back with Michael Brown because I still say that the state action involved was excessive. I took the position that we cannot summarily execute people in a democracy when they have a right to trial by jury. And when you end up allowing that, that's exactly what happens. People are entitled to an arrest, they're entitled to a trial, and they're entitled to be judged by their peers. And so when we start allowing contravention of that.
Brother Imam, can you hold that thought for 2 minutes? I got to switch mics. Just hold your thought.
Okay.
Audience, hold on for just about 35 seconds. Thank you.
We have returned on the air. We just had a technical problem. We're speaking with Brother Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam, and he is covering.
So, you know, Brother, I indicated to you when these matters were developing in the country that I went down to Dothan, Alabama, went into a bookstore, had not violated any law. On my way out, I was stopped by a Caucasian law enforcement officer and a African-American officer. If I was not steeped in wise activity in terms of wise strategy as to how to react in that situation, it could have gotten real ugly. But they totally, without knowledge of who I was, what I had done in life, came up against me and violated my rights. Once you start allowing that, then it becomes a runaway council. So we have to check it constitutionally. I'm against excessive police action against anybody. I don't care if African-Americans killing up each other 1,000 a day. Because you know what? There are other African-Americans like yourself and others who are decent, hardworking citizens. And once these rights are violated against some, then everybody is an open class for that kind of constitutional violation. So we cannot allow it. Are you still there?
This, yes, Brother Man, this is why we have so much respect for you. You have been able to make distinctions and to frame issues legally. And you're quite right that we can't equate state action and with African-American on crime. And I think we do need a fairness committee. Our people, and some of us who have gone out for the struggle to clean our people up, have neglected the other side of the issue with fighting for justice and fighting for fairness that we as a people need. In fact, all human beings need, and we should stay on that case. And you've been at the forefront of it, certainly helping me to work through those issues, and that's why I respect your political acumen. I want to now move.
But now I cut my political teeth during a period of time when you didn't have the kind of blatant and frequent actions we see now, where it appears every 2 weeks something is happening. Back when I came into politics, my focus was stopping neighborhood black on black crime. And that's what I preached against, and that's what we dealt with in Selma. Nevertheless, if law enforcement had wrongfully harmed any citizen, African American especially, I would have shift gears and dealt with that. So it's not an either or thing. We can be against both, because we, on the case of black on black, the Quran say, stand for justice even if it's against your own selves. In the other context, that's a badge and incident of the oppressive order by the state that African Americans have experienced since we've been in this country. So in the Quran, we are enjoined to fight against oppression.
Yes, sir. I want to now move us to another topic that's becoming hot, the political issue, or perhaps even the theatrical issue, of one Donald Trump. What is...
Well, now, that must be put in political and trans-political perspective. Politically, what you have is a phenomenon where the rise Republican political scientists, after Obama won, they understood that Obama never did receive more than 35%, I think, of the Caucasian vote in this country. That's a lot of votes. And when African Americans saw that, they superficially concluded, without examining the data, that he had gotten a majority of the white vote. He never had. No Democrat, including Clinton, Kerry, nor Gore ever got above the lower 30s when it came to the majority of Caucasian votes. Since Nixon, the majority of Caucasian votes have always gone Republican. A lot of that because of the one-sided broad-based Caucasian support to the Republican Party based upon the Southern strategy. There possibly was an exception with the election of Jimmy Carter, a son of the South, in 1976. So now, what happened was that, okay, he's won, but how do we have a comeback? First of all, we galvanize that vote to take over Congress and the states, and we change the laws in terms of gerrymandering and dominate the state houses in the U.S. Congress. But we must have a strategy to get the White House back. And they thought of galvanizing what was called a Tea Party movement. Now, brother, ma'am, I say to you and your audience, I'm not sure if there ever was an organic Tea Party movement, whether it was stimulated by mega powers or whether or not initially it was an autonomous, authentic movement. But either way, it was not long before the powers that be co-opted that movement. And they developed a strategy where they played upon the lower angels of that mass base of whites who did not follow the American democratic principle. What do I voted against Bush twice. But once he won, I supported, in a broad sense, his leadership. Even when I disagreed with his policy, there was no challenge to his legitimacy. Even though he had that problem in Florida, I did not look upon him as being an illegitimate president. The U.S. Supreme Court made a decision. You can evaluate it the way you want to. They had the constitutional powers to make that decision. But with Obama, these buck white voters never did accept the Democratic result that he had won the presidency. They were angry about that. And the big boys, who are not racist by any stretch of the imagination, but they knew many in their base was racist. So they began to feed them a steady, constant diet of red meat by pestering in Obama psychic mania. Literally ran their base crazy with irrational resentment against President Barack Hussein Obama. Fox is guilty. They were part of the plan in the major Republican political leadership. Roger Ailes is not racist. I don't know whether Rupert Murdoch is, but they could count. CNN had part of the moderate and liberal base in America. MSNBC had the rest. Fox had almost a monopoly on the conservative base that went against Obama. So what was their strategy? As long as we could keep this audience hyped up, then there's no way that MSNBC or CNN can beat us in the ratings. Then our revenue increase, and then we make more money. So they had a pure business economic motive. The political players in the Republican Party that came into power as a result of the Tea Party and gerrymandering, they had a motive to get the White House back. And that meant addicting a good percentage of that base who never accepted Obama, resented Obama. That's not all the Republican Party base now, but it's at least one-third. If you study it, Donald Trump was the main one, along with others, beating that red meat. This is not an irony that Obama is going to Kenya now as Trump rises in the Republican poll. It's a message with the, in that. This partner, this other, this Kenyan Mau Mau, this Bertha thing, Donald Trump played a role in that big time. Beating the base, this red meat. Now, they don't want to hear anyone unless they appeared this red meat. Not just rare steak, but super red, dripping with Obama-like blood. Okay? That's all they want to hear. Now, as Chuck Todd said, the Republicans are reaping what they sow. They all went along with it. Jeb Bush, all of them. Over the years, all this sick Obama red meat bashing. Now, the concept in the dictionary, there's a word called trumpery. It means mumbo jumbo. It means foolishness. It means being a fraud. And it means being deceitful. Now, you got 16 Republicans out there. They may want to come with some sensible government, but they can't do it because Trump is out there with all that red meat. So let me give you some examples. Jeb Bush said the other day that we need to get rid of Medicare. Now, he knows that's not going to happen. When his brother tried to do that, the Republican Congress wouldn't even put it on the floor. They wouldn't support that. Marco Rubio, when I become president, I'm going to tear up the Iran deal the first day. Scott Walker, the first day I'm in office, I'm going to be prepared to go to war from the first day, without talking to the CIA, without talking to your generals, the inaugural ball, the parade, your inaugural address, and you're going to make the mumbo-jumbo statement of trumpery. I didn't call it a trumpery. That's what the dictionary calls it. That's the bluster that Trump puts out. Now, I know he's from New Jersey, and you all like anything New York, New Jersey that looks fascinating. It's a terrible indictment against American order. Mike Huckabee say we need to run down there in Israel and stand next to Netanyahu. Bob Corker says that the Iran deal that Kerry and this brilliant nuclear physicist, Ernest Moniz, was fleeced. Yet the British, the Germans, the Russian, and the Chinese, as well as members of the United Nations Security Council, they voted unanimously to support that Iranian deal. So now, are you saying the whole world represent almost 90% of the population on the planet was pleased? Yes, you're saying it. Do you believe it? No. But that's the red meat we're going to have to feed to our base, making them think that Obama is so weak that he sold the country out, notwithstanding the fact that a red-blooded warrior, John Kerry, led the negotiations. And we had one of the top businesses on our team. Now, let's flip the script. When Obama was running, not only could he not engage in trumpery, they showed tapes of his minister, Jeremiah Wright. And it became a crisis not based upon what he said, but what Wright said. Even when he's been in office, he's had to say everything completely proper when it comes to the structure of American political life. Any little deviation, they jumped on him. Now some in the media are glorifying Trump for whatever he says when Obama would have been kicked out the race. So on a larger level, what is this saying? It's saying to me that God's judgment has come down upon new American male leadership. And they don't believe in their own democracy anymore. And they may have said, I support it because I'm going to give them a chance to prove one way or the other as to whether or not they believe in these democratic principles. I'm not going to be skeptical like you. I'm not going to be doubtful like you. I'm going to give them a chance. But since the imam has passed away from this plane, it's becoming obvious now that from Donald Trump on around, many in the establishment no longer respect the intelligence of the American Democratic public, and they have no faith in the future of this country. That's obvious. So they're playing games based upon what? Money? He has the money in the crowd to do it. Koch brothers, money. That's what they've turned to now. So I'm not impressed with that at all. I think it's an example of Caucasian male arrogance and a moving away from the gravitas of being a leader over the most powerful country in the world. With that kind of irresponsibility that all of them are displaying, all kind of irresponsible governmental statements. I've been in the game, and I never saw political figures in the state of Alabama, even Republicans, make mumbo-jumbo statements that's totally alien and foreign to any real government that they're going to have to take charge of. So now that's the way I look at that Trump thing. Most of what he says is trumpery. He's pulling that big deal in his direction. They are trumping the intelligence of the common American voter, and it's a shame. And they put all this pressure on him. Move the goalposts. He had to almost be a governmental saint. And now anything goes. Moving the goalposts back to the goal line. All you got to do is show up and run, and you're all right now as long as you're a Caucasian male. Did I lose your brother, ma'am?
No, sir, you certainly didn't. I'm going to follow up with a question on the Democrat side. The so-called front runner, Ms. Secretary, latest title, Ms. Secretary Hillary Clinton, has also made a statement that the first order of business for her would be to bomb Iran.
No, it's the way she said that. She'll never get the Democratic nomination. Brother Ma'am, you misinformed. That's how Obama beat her, because she voted for the war in Iraq. The Democratic base will never vote for a Democratic nominee who advertised going in the war. That's a kiss of death even for Hillary Clinton. There's no way she said that. There's no way.
We're not on me.
I didn't hear you, buddy, ma'am. Hello?
Yes, I understand. So you're saying the statement by Ms. Clinton, Secretary of State Clinton,
Ms. Clinton has never said, brother, that she will bomb Iraq. She may have said that all options are on the table, meaning
I did read a statement by her, and this is according to the New York Times and other
places. No, sir, there's no way. There's no way she said that. Now, I heard Obama saying, even with this deal pending, that military options are still on the table.
Yeah,
now, they'll say something like that, but there's no way.
I'll have to get the direct quote.
I guarantee you, it's no way. They would preclude her from the beginning of being a serious candidate. What has changed since 2008 when a rookie freshman whipped her, not for advocating bombing Iraq, but just voting for intervention? I know that didn't happen. I understand Democratic politics enough and the astuteness of Bill and Hillary Clinton. I know they have not advertised publicly in advance that she would bomb Iran as a matter of policy. She may say that that's one of the options. She was Secretary of State. She the one started this whole negotiations.
Well,
she was involved in it as Secretary of State.
Yeah, well, I had to go to the record on that. I think one of the American Israeli Council, when she spoke, she made that statement. Perhaps tomfoolery, perhaps political expediency.
No, sir. She has not said that when she get in office, she's going to bomb Iran, because that would be a statement of Jim Webb. They would be showing that tape. Bernie Sanders would be showing that tape, and O'Malley would be showing it, and every last one of them would defeat her for the Democratic nomination.
Well, we'll see.
With that kind of powder. The same way Obama whipped her.
I think when you come to the state of Israel, and I want to move away from this topic, because when the state of Israel is put on the table, Democrats and others always have to prove their bona fides as how much they will do for Israel. It has to almost be a bending over back. I'm going to stay away from that.
It depends upon the Democrats. With Chuck Schumer, who alleged to be a Democrat and progressive until Israel's interest is on the line. And then he demonstrates his true colors. I'm more concerned about the security of Israel than I am about the welfare of the United States of America. Now, what Esau or what European Americans, how they look at him, that's on him. That's on them. But that's exactly what is happening.
Brother Imam, can you hold
what now?
Can you hold just 1 minute? I'm gonna switch the mic, and we go off the air just a minute. And I'll be back on in about 30 seconds. We have charge this mic. Okay, just a moment. You're listening to another edition of Religion Means Live. I'm your host, Imam Alfred. Actually, our co-host is Brother Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam. We are switching formats today. He usually give a lecture, but today we're doing a question and answer session. You can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. I want to ask you, on the Democratic side, what do you make of the Bernie Sanders phenomenon?
Well, he's advocating something that a slice of the base like in terms of red meat, dealing with this issue, so-called, of inequality. But there's no road to victory in American democracy for one who advocates a quasi-socialist position. They may feed that to the Democratic base, and he may have, like Trump, 20-25% of the people supporting him and excited, drawing crowds, but he'll never get the nomination. Where you now? What food? Ain't gonna be none. Okay, all right, well, y'all getting ready to go. Enjoy yourself. Something so I can go for Panera Bread.